time to take a listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 28th of June 2014. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday the 28th of June, we welcomed new Island Life host Gary Bell, who took his first turn in the seat, assisted by David Basham. Gary talked to Rhiannon from Waiheke Library, Pat King of the Onitangi Ratepayers Association, organiser of the upcoming power supply celebration, and Island newcomer Brian Smith.
Rhiannon, hi, welcome. You've got some news for us from the library today.
Talking briefly about the school holidays and then move on into talking a little bit about the new library.
Fantastic.
Okay, so the school holidays are just a week away now. They start next Saturday. And partly because of our impending move, we've got our school holiday event right up front on the first Saturday of the school holidays, which is Saturday the 5th of July. And it's going to be in the afternoon at 2 o'clock. The school holidays across Auckland libraries this time are called Wild. Mm-hmm. And we decided to go wild with Helen Elscott, who's Waiheke's resident expert on wild foods.
Oh, wonderful.
Things that you can find in the bush and in your gardens that you can actually eat. So we are going to have Helen along to talk about that. We're going to have opportunities to taste all sorts of different wild foods. And then we're going to go on into a great event for the kids looking at how to invent revolting bush recipes and terrific wilderness tucker. So that's from 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. on Saturday the 5th of July, and it's called Wild Wilderness Terrific Tucker.
Matt, and that sounds like an event that we should not be missing. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's for school-aged children, so anyone who wants to come along to that, they're very welcome.
Wonderful.
So that's that. And then very soon after that, we are getting ready for our move to the new library. Everyone's very excited. And as you may have seen in the Gulf News this week, we have announced our opening date, which is the 26th of July. So we've got less than a month before we're going to be in the new building, which is very exciting. So that's a Saturday. We're going to open up at 10 o'clock on that Saturday for the first time. And then we will be open for the first time on the Sunday because we're going to 7-day-a-week opening.
Oh, really?
So we'll be open Saturdays and Sundays from 10 till 4. And then that first week, we will go into our slightly extended hours from Monday to Friday. We'll be open 9 until 6. So those people coming home on the 5 o'clock ferry have got a chance to dash into the library on their way home and pick up their holds and things like that.
Oh, what about that?
So that's
fantastic.
Really cool. Mm. So in preparation for that move, obviously it's a bit like moving house. Even though it's just across the courtyard, it's going to be a big, big job. So we're going to be closing our old library on the 12th of July. So we've got just 2 weeks we're going to be closed. So what we're recommending to people is stock up on your books before the 12th of July, particularly, you know, with people with school kids home over the holidays, stock up in that first week of the holidays. We're sort of joking to everybody, the more books you take out, the less books we have to move. So that saves us a bit of work as well. So that would be cool. And in that closed period, if you've got any holds coming in, we'll obviously be holding on to them and things like that. So we'll take care of what you need for that period, but we will be shut. So yeah, it's all very exciting. Looking forward to being in that new space. It's gorgeous.
Oh, look, it's a wonderful-looking building, such an asset to the island, and certainly we've had some visitors coming over, and they see that building when they walk past, and they just go, wow, that's amazing.
It is a beautiful
building. It's going to be fantastic for everybody, and, you know, residents and visitors alike are going to be so much better off with that new building.
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and we've got a whole load of new stock coming in to fill the shelves as well. So
very nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Rhiannon, thank you very much for your time today, and we're all looking forward to that
big
event.
Waikiki Radio.
So, moving on to our next guest, we've got Pat King. Pat's here to tell us all about the Power Connection celebration. Hi, Pat. How are you this morning?
Great, Gary. Thank you, and welcome to the station.
Thanks very much. Yeah, so Pat, tell us a little bit about what's happening around this power celebration. What's happening, when's it happening, and who's involved, and where do we go for information around it?
Right, well, it's next Saturday, 5th of July, and it's that day is 60 years ago that the power actually got switched onto the island.
Right.
So they had a whoopee, knees up and all the rest of it, and big parade and all that sort of carry-on, hangi and drinks and that, and so we're going to sort of replicate it.
Nice.
Unfortunately, we can't do the parade because we're not allowed to, and that sort of stuff. But we are going to have like static displays of cars, motorbikes, and hopefully Len with his fire engine.
Fantastic.
And we got face painting and bouncy castles, got a little circus, got a hangi, we got sausage sizzle, we got musos during the day, afternoon tea, nighttime there's a dance with a band, and that sort of thing. So it's basically just a celebration of it all, and also we're doing fundraising for the kitchen for our hall, which is Onitangi Hall.
Wonderful.
This is all at Onitangi Hall.
Sure.
So there'll be people trying to extract money off you and that sort of stuff in the nicest possible way, and yeah, that's about the style of it.
Oh, very good. And so are there going to be advertisements or posters around the place, or how do people sort of, if they want to follow up and maybe pass this information on to others, where would they go for that?
Well, there's posters and that going up all around the place, and Marketplace is doing a blurb, and I guess Golf News is. I haven't seen that one, but...
Right.
And so it's just anybody who wants to come along, come along. There's no charge for coming along, but there's charge for the hangi and the sausages and that sort of thing. But, there's no rain date, so let's hope that it is a fine day.
Mm.
And the more the merrier.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, life must have been so much different back then without the power supply. Certainly our friends and colleagues out at the Great Barrier are still living that lifestyle, I suppose, and very successfully. We take it for granted. We flick the switch, but certainly we know at home that when the power goes out, everything stops. So we also like the idea of thinking of alternatives as well, which would lead on to perhaps our next guest as well. We're going to talk a bit about that.
Mm.
But no, wonderful to have the power out here. And thank you very much for that update, Pat.
No, thanks for the privilege. And yeah, come along, everybody. We need you.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Gary.
Okay, cheers.
Thanks,
thank you.
Island Life. Join us for your weekly catch-up with what people are doing and what people are thinking here on Waiheke. Issues, events, personalities and more. It's all here on Island Life, on Waiheke Radio, Saturday mornings 10 to 12. Brought to you by Placemakers Waiheke. Know how, can do.
My next guest is Mr. Brian Smith. Brian is a recent new Waihekian, if you like, all the way from the UK, and we've brought Brian in today to give us a little bit of background and profile of a new person on the island, as well as to talk about some key interests that Brian has and how that might be interesting for many of us on the island. So welcome today, Brian, and thank you very much for coming along to speak with us today.
It's my pleasure. Good morning, Gary. It was great to hear Charlie Parker. That was a great intro in here, as he was one of the probably the greatest jazz musician of all time, coming from a long time ago, even predates me, that one. But why I'm here is because we chose to follow our daughter to New Zealand, who now lives on the island and travels to the South Island to work, as well as to join her husband who works here. Who should be nameless. It's I first visited the island about 10 years ago when we were over here on a cricket tour and fell in love with it then, but nowhere did I dream that we'd actually come and live here. We've got permanent residency, but we have to serve our time 2 years
right
before we can be free to move.
Mm.
My wife and I, this is Patricia, can't move out of New Zealand unless we have New Zealand government permission for 2 years. So it's someone says, a bit like a prison. Well, if all prisons were like this, it'd be wonderful.
It's not a bad place, is it?
Not exactly. A bad place.
Not at all.
I'm a retired businessman from the UK, was a chartered accountant, dabbled in economics and business management. I'm now free of all of that, and it's great to be here. It's, in many ways, it is a wacky wahiki. like for instance, this morning.
Yes.
You sent me out for milk because they didn't have any milk here. I mean, you know. And I had to walk down to the dairy in the town. And outside the new library, there's this big sign on the pavement which says, "Pavement closed, please cross onto the other side." Unfortunately, there's no pavement on the other side. You have to walk down the middle of the road.
Yep, welcome to Waiheke.
Welcome to Waiheke.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
It's wonderful.
It is. So, Brian,
and, of course, you don't have an insurance policy here.
No.
You can't sue anybody, so it's you're bulletproof.
Oh, ACC will pick up the tab.
Yep.
And that's another subject for another day.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you're the expert on that one.
Yeah. Brian, look, well, we are very pleased you have the here. And just as a full disclosure, Brian is my father-in-law. So I was sort of very, very happy to have him along and to share some background for everyone out there. Brian, you've also got a couple of areas of interest that you have followed over the years, and some of that's relevant to some discussion that happens on the island on a fairly regular basis now. And I'd just like to wonder if you'd like to just take us into some of that, please.
Well, one of the big issues when I left was the offshore wind farms. just to give you a parallel, imagine the scene. I'm now looking out through the window and across to Coromandel and Barrier. And if you could imagine out there, about 10 kilometres offshore, you had 200 times 200 meter high turbines. 200 meter high, that's about not far short of 700 feet, which is not far short of the Sky Tower. You'd have 200 of those all staring at you. And the UK government, obviously trying to raise revenue, are quite happy to pay the French government, who own the power company, billions of pounds, to subsidize them putting it out there.
That's amazing.
Now, most of us are quite big backers of alternative energy, but there's a place for it.
Yes.
And 200 meters offshore of a holiday resort, as it was in Bournemouth, doesn't go down well. It goes down well with the greenie groups, of which I'm a member, but they seem to shut their eyes on local matters.
Right. And is there an impact on the local wildlife, Brian?
It can be.
Mm.
And in that, the instance there was that area, which is off the Isle of Wight and off Swanage and Bournemouth, is a big area of bird migration. You don't have much bird migration in New Zealand, because the birds stay, practically. Some, like the godwits, fly north, but that's very few.
Yes.
But we would certainly envisage about at least a million birds flying through this wind farm out in the spring and out in the autumn. And you can imagine the devastation that's going to cause.
Literally, feathers must be flying. It must
well,
be
you
terrible.
Never see them.
Yeah.
One of these, the blades of these, of one of these big turbines cover an area, just one turbine, of 3 hectares. That's
incredible.
A big area, and they travel at about 200 miles an hour.
What sort of, do they make a lot of, it must be quite noisy having all those wind turbines together, is it?
They say they don't,
yeah.
But there are possible health impacts, but nobody's, because there's been very few in the UK.
Yes.
And in the States, there's been some, and a lot of the stuff in the States is brushed under the carpet.
Look, I have noticed around New Zealand, certainly Wellington has quite a few wind turbines. You notice them as you're flying in. And also, too, last year we were driving through the centre of central Otago amongst the hills and were surprised to see a whole hillside of them down there when they sort of sprung up just quietly below the radar. But I wonder how many would it take to power somewhere like Waiheke, do you think?
Well, it depends on the size. I would think you could put 2 on one of the eastern hills and that would power all of Waiheke.
Well, that's a lot better than sort of several hundred, isn't it?
And of course, you haven't got Some people would say it will spoil Waiheke, the scenery, but there's a place for it.
Yeah, I think it's a great alternative. It's another option.
Have difficulty in not supporting it.
Yeah,
that's a double negative, but you know, it's quite difficult. I would support it, I think, once we know what. The problem is with these things, it's money talks, and it's the power companies that want the alternative energy.
Yes.
They're
yes.
the only ones that can afford to put it in there. Right.
So back to our guest, Brian. Now, look, we were talking before about some music, and part of the interview today was going to touch on some jazz music, because Brian is a closet jazz aficionado, if you like, and I'm still learning more about some of Brian's experiences around jazz, certainly in London and other areas in the UK. I've heard some very interesting stories of note, so we thought we might ask Brian to share some of those experiences with us. So Brian, we put on Charlie Parker for you earlier on. That was a request for yourself, and I believe you had the pleasure of many years ago of being at a Charlie Parker show.
Afraid not.
No? Oh, I got that wrong. Okay.
He died long before I came
to
London.
Oh, I see. Okay, must
be
the
chat. I've got a little anecdote about the library, because there's a rumour going round that the old library, they don't know what to do with it, but they're going to convert it into a home for misbehaving librarians.
Oh, really? I wonder if we've got many of those around.
Well, they're all volunteering.
So
the jazz scene, yeah. We're talking about the late 50s when I went to London as a student, and the UK was now then being opened up for American jazz. There was no such other thing. There was dance music in the UK, and the Americans couldn't come over because the unions wouldn't let them. There had to be an exchange. For every jazz person that came from the States, someone had to be sent over from the UK, and then they saw the daftness of that and allowed them in.
Right.
I won't go through everything that I saw, but a lot of people have heard of the Festival Hall, which was built for the Festival of Britain in the early 50s, and is still there, the major concert hall in London. And we went, any of the big performers like Dave Brubeck and MJQ performed there. And that was my first introduction, basically, to live black music, was the MJQ.
Fantastic.
We had no idea what it was like. It was full. The concert hall, I presume, was full of at least 4,000 people, all soberly dressed. This is pre the Beatles and all the hysteria from the young girls.
So quite formal.
Very formal. We all sat there. We'd all bought, imagine, a lot of us were students. And these four tall black guys came on.
Yes.
All in formal dress. Three with little goatee beards. And you thought, are they funeral directors or professors? And they sat down. And it was out of this world. Within 2 minutes, everybody in that hall were on their feet,
yes,
shouting and yelling.
The wonderful.
Place was rocking and swinging.
Incredible.
And it was new music to most people, because this was chamber music converted into jazz.
Right.
Not like bop,
right,
which was much more discordant. This was classical gavotte turned into wonderful music.
Fantastic.
So that was the main one. But the other one was going to two other resorts, venues, I should say, which was one in Kilburn, the Kilburn Empire, and the Hammersmith Palais, which were dance halls but could seat quite a lot of people. And the Americans sent over this outfit called Jazz at the Philharmonic, which is a mixed bunch. But when you consider in that crowd was Dizzy Gillespie, Ella Fitzgerald,
wow,
Oscar Peterson, Stan Getz,
incredible,
J.J. Johnson, Kay Winding, and it went on and on and on, and it was fabulous music.
What an experience.
It was.
Unbelievable.
Never to be repeated. It all started because when we were youngsters, the only way we could get, you couldn't get music like this on the BBC, but they had AFN, which is the American Forces Network, played out of Germany. This, it was like pirate radio you could pick up on Hilversum and then whatever this was, AFM, and they put out all this American jazz. So this is when I was still in school and heard Stan Kenton in Cardiff. Stan Kenton was something different.
Wonderful.
That was, yeah. And that was purely because of AFN. That's enough jazz for the day, lads.
I think you might have a book in there somewhere, Brian. So look, I'm sure we'll be picking up the subject of jazz again in the future, and I'm sure you'll be part of it, Brian. Now, what I'd like to do now is move on. You've got some other news for us around some activity you're now involved in the island. So I'd wonder if you give us a wee update on that, please.
Yes, I'm a... Before we left the island in the UK, I was quite active in... Not in local politics, I've avoided that like the plague, but certainly in local community work, which I did a lot. And when I came over here, I was very pleased to be invited to join the Rotarians. And I now rotate, as Gary says, every Monday. And they're a fantastic lot. What I like about this island is there's no, very little class structure here. You can't tell where people come from by their accents, which you can do in England.
Yes.
And everybody's judged from what they give. And I just loved working with these people. They've conned me. I mean, they asked me to work with the Wharf to Wharf sponsorship, which I'm doing now.
Yes.
Wharf to Wharf, as everybody in the island knew when I didn't know, is a series of is four runs from... How do you pronounce it? Oropiu to Maitea via Konatangi.
Yes.
Four different races, and running and walking. And it's gone on for, this is the 24th year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it's run very professionally. We pray, the race director is professional. And so are the people that do the timing. Everyone's tagged. Even the children that run or walk have a little bracelet on that gives their number and their, yes, and they can tag their timing. And it is fantastically well organized. But all this costs a lot of money.
Yes, of course.
And we try and organize it so that there is some surplus left over, which hopefully that can then go to contributions to local communities, rather like some of them are the Dolphins, which are the ladies' netball. I called them hockey last week and was almost killed. Wahiki netball,
right.
As well as back to the Rotarians who distribute it to good causes throughout the Gulf.
Absolutely, absolutely. They're doing a lot of wonderful work. So what are the dates around this again, Brian? Sorry,
17th of January, 2015.
Yes. Okay, great. Fantastic.
It starts very early in the morning. It'll certainly be 8-ish, to 8:30, because it's in summer and you don't want to run in that heat. There's quite professional runners in there. I mean, some of them do this run from whatever you said it was to Maitea in an hour and a half, you know, and that's going a bit.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
It is. All right. Well, look, Brian, thank you very much for that update. And we wish you all the best with your endeavours around fundraising and leading some of the activity around the Wharf to Wharf.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Well, Gary's doing fine, and we've got through some interesting guests. Those that have been listening to for a while will know that last year I used to do a program called Out of the Blue, and it was an hour mental health program. Lots of commitments meant that I couldn't really get here to do that, but Brian and I have talked because Brian does have a background in health, and I'm going to do a short part of Out of the Blue on the fourth Saturday of each month. So the one thing I've taken part in recently is a research project, which was done through the Like Minds Like Mine national program, and it's a report on how people have experienced social inclusion and how the powerful role that friends, whanau, employers and others play in their recovery and wellness during mental illness. It's called Stories of Success, and it highlights how being socially included for people experiencing mental illness is really important. Being excluded can cause distress for people who are already going through a tough time and makes that recovery journey much harder. And when we talk about recovery, Gary, we've got a very different word. Like, people talk about how perhaps an alcoholic might recover. The idea of recovery was that the old style was you sort of medicated and then wait for people to get better. Then it was realized that while people were waiting to get better, they could do things. They could still function. So that's why way back the hospitals were closed and community mental health services were brought in. So people, you know, could start doing things for themselves and start taking part in the community rather than just waiting to see if they get better. Because some people will reach a level, some people got completely better, some people reached a level where they had to be careful with themselves, but it didn't mean they couldn't do anything. So it was really just getting on with things and learning to manage how you are feeling. So that's really what this is about and how important it is for people to take part in the community. And a lot of people spoke very positively about being included in the community and having access to employment and good housing and how this would boost their self-esteem. Do you find any of this with people at the health trust that you look after, that they have isolation?
I mean, yeah, often you'll find that people aren't challenged by just one particular issue. Often people have a lot of issues dealing with, and often too a physical injury or some kind of chronic illness can actually also lead on to and even stimulate some mental health issues as well. So we do absolutely come into contact with a lot of our folks at UVR Services that are also struggling with those other issues. And, you know, we're not a mental health service as such, but we certainly have social work that does a wonderful job in the community, and we would refer on to other organisations as we need to, such as yourselves or the Taylor Centre or our colleagues down at Piritahi Harora, for example, do some very good work around mental health services as well, I believe. So, I mean, we don't specialise in mental health, but we certainly do encounter it and we refer on as we can.
I think a lot of what's written in this research project can apply to anything. I think the danger is going, that's mental health there, that's disability, that's this one. Physical disability is different. But if you've got a physical disability and you're isolated at home, that does nothing for your well-being. And that's why having friends, having people who care about you and getting out there and doing things. Like, the real good thing is the Care and Craft. That's on at Mora Hall on a Thursday. And people get picked up from their homes and they wouldn't normally be able to get there.
Nice.
They get taken there, have activities, have a meal, and they would never get there. And I think that's the kind of thing you need to get people just to socialise. Because I remember my mother lived on her own, and the weekends were the hardest for her. She didn't mind if I didn't visit during the week. That was fine. There was activity. But the weekends, she looked forward to seeing me on the weekends or me taking her out, because that was the time when it seemed to drag
Absolutely, and certainly, you know, often you're right. I think the same principles apply to, for example, people that may fall into our age population, and certainly those folks also, I think, can benefit a lot from community inclusion. I mean, isolation and loneliness is a big deal for our older folks, many of them. So, I agree with you. I think the same principle can apply across a lot of different areas of health.
That's Island Life for this Saturday. We've had a new host and we've been introducing him to the desk and what it's like to do Island Life. So how's it been going, Gary?
I thought I was good at multitasking, but after today I realise I've still got some work to do. But no, a little nerve-wracking, but it's been really enjoyable. It's been great fun, and I'm just looking forward to coming to terms with all this technology. But look, it's great. Thanks for the opportunity, David. It's been great.
Well, part of the thing is it's just a matter of getting used to it. It's a bit like chewing gum and walking at the same time. Wasn't it President Ford they said couldn't walk and chew gum at the same time? Well, we're trying to prove that we can do it. So that's the end of Island Life for this Saturday. Chris will be back on the first Saturday of July. I'll be here on the second. And Gary and I'll be back with all the lessons we've learned on the fourth Saturday of the month, and that's the opening of the library, so there could be something quite different.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.